Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the July 8th edition of Commodity Week. Corn futures rallied back this week despite the heavy hand in Washington, where USDA added acres and bushels, and Congress is poised to eliminate ethanol subsidies. Not even Informa's great big production number could dampen the mood Friday in the trade. And then there's the soybean market. Is the triple top at $14 meant to be broken? We'll find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Iowa State University's Chad Hart. Our panelists in studio today include Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. China, most believe, held the corn market. Wayne Nelson higher the last couple of days this week, adding to their purchases from March until now. Some say that nation has tallied as much as 5 million metric tons in buys, and that's just half of what they might need. How important was it to the trade that China be seen as a buyer this week?
Well, Todd, it was very important. After the government increased our stocks a lot, that we'll be changing our beginning stocks for next year by those coming on in, this new added sales that didn't seem to be in the balance sheet before can turn around and take us back under a billion bushel carryover for next year. So it was very important.
Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
Well, I think it's a game changer when you take a look at export projections for the coming year. I think depending upon how much they buy here, there's rumors anywhere upwards of maybe 8 million tons over a period of time. If that's anywhere close to being accurate, you're going to see the balance sheet definitely be reflected with higher export numbers. So that was a major factor. Actually, South Korea was a big buyer also on the break. And I'd say this is one thing that we've noticed in this market this year. Every time we've had a big break in the market, world buyers, end users came up and just stepped up and bought the dickens out of it and pulled us out of the hole. And this is what, again, appears to be what's happened here.
And Greg Johnson.
I think it was good for the market. It gave the traders something to focus on besides the government numbers. Those government numbers may change when the next quarterly stocks number comes out. But in the meantime, the bulls kind of had this to sink their teeth into and kept people from just completely panicking.
Dan, why is in the global market, why are the buyers coming in when the price breaks? And why do you suppose that they're coming in big ways?
Well, they have market analysts as we do here in the United States, and they know that the overall balance sheet in the United States is very snug. They also know that it wouldn't take much to make things really snug. So instead of trying to chase it higher with the index crowd and the speculative fund, They just are patiently and done pretty good jobs of waiting on these breaks to buy and cover their needs. But I've seen it happen every time this year, every time we've had a big break, whether it was the March break, whether it was the May break, and then this most recent break, they just step up and, you know, we break trend lines, and all of a sudden within 3 or 4 days we're back above the trend line.
In Chicago this week at the CME Group, corn had a high on the week. Remember, we give you the day in the overnight trade, electronic and open outcry, and then the change from Friday to Friday. The high at $6.84 and a quarter, and the July, the low at $6.47 and a half. Settlement price there, $6.72 and a quarter cents, finished 31 and a half cents higher from the previous week for July corn. December corn up 40 and a quarter cents, finished at $6.37 a bushel. Next week on Tuesday morning, Wayne, USDA will release another set of world agricultural supply and demand estimates. And producers, along with trade estimates, are out for some of those. They're estimating in the average that corn carry out this year will be 905 million, and that next year that will be 994 million. That, of course, is up from the 730, that 905. That was the June estimate. Where do you think it'll be?
Well, Todd, that's going to be the big question, because I think, are we going to put any of this Chinese business that we think has happened over here in that report or not? If they don't, it's going to stay on the high end of it and could even be above a billion bushels. But we're going to have to wait and see where they put that in the balance sheet.
Greg, I've got to ask you a question, and you know, part of this is that the Andersons are reported, of course, and I think this is not only just reported, but factually are using a blend, 10% wheat in their ethanol plants, at least three of them. Neil McKinstry has said that on the record, but I want you to think about that, and then substitution in the livestock industry, and how that might work into next week's USDA reports. In particular, because in March, USDA said, watch for the substitution in wheat, and it was just a byline, no supported factuals or any number there, but it's got to show up someplace. Do you think it might next week?
I don't think it'll show up next week, and the reason is the wheat break didn't really happen until later in that quarter. So the amount of actual wheat being used by feeders and by the ethanol manufacturers probably wasn't real great in the second quarter. But in the third quarter, if prices stay where they are, we will see that. So I think eventually that will be reflected, but probably not in next week's numbers.
You want to take a stab in the third quarter what that might look like?
Let's just see how the prices play out. I personally don't think wheat can stay below corn for an extended period of time. It's only happened, I think, twice before, and both times it didn't stay there very long. So I don't think wheat can stay below corn for very long, and that may price itself out of the market when it comes to using it for ethanol.
Dan, your estimates for Tuesday morning?
After the last few reports, I think it's time, you know, you just go to the bleachers anymore.
Right, and it's two different agencies, which I think often people sort of forget, so that and that one of them, NASS, is the agency we got numbers from the previous time, and this one will be the World Ag Outlook Board. Here, when we think about that, we think of Jerry Bangy on the World Ag Outlook Board, and we think of Joe Prasaki at NASS. But really, they do talk, but they're separate agencies.
Well, they're separate, but I think there's been on a couple occasions where they stepped maybe out of their bounds or out of their zone by, number one, lowering the yield in the May report just because we
had
2 weeks.
That was the World Agriculture Outlook Board.
Just because we were behind on planting, I'm not necessarily sure that was warranted, because you can look at delayed plantings in the past and half of them end up with above average yield. So I'm not too sure that was warranted. And then they took the liberty to make a downward adjustment on planted acreage and harvested acres because of all of this planting delays. And, you know, I think myself, they should stay with objective data, and that is the NASS group. They come out with a number, and until there's evidence that number should be changed, they need to work with those numbers, and they should then work with the supply and then they need to kind of figure out what their demand is. So my guess is that, I mean, they may decide to lower harvested acres, because I think there is a general consensus among the trade that that harvested acre number could come down. There's a general consensus among the trade that crop rating levels, just like the Infoma number came out, if you just look at crop rating levels and assume we have a nice growing season from here on out, you might be able to get 163 bushels out of this thing. So it's to the point now where I think you need to brace for about anything from what I've seen over the past 2 months.
You mentioned the Informa number. The Informa numbers were out Friday. They say prediction at this point is 162.5 for the average yield for corn. By comparison, last year we were at 152.8 on the official, and that would put 162.5 a crop size of 13.759 billion bushels. The 2010 crop was 12.447 on corn. What do you think those Informa numbers?
Well, I think if you are looking at the crop ratings and you look at how the crop has progressed, and you look that most of the crop is in the high producing areas of Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, southern Minnesota, that we have a chance of getting back up there. I mean, if anybody's walked out their back door and looked at their crop over the last 10 days, they've seen it grow a foot and a half or more. I never saw a better-looking crop driving over here today in many, many years than what the crop looked evenly across and how it's caught up and grown. So there's definitely the chance of that. Now, if you're in northern Illinois, northern Indiana, northern Ohio, where there's some dry spots and your corn's rolling, you're going to be listening to me and want to be throwing rocks. But, you know, like I say, down here and in where the high yields are is looking extremely good.
Okay. At $6.37 for new crop corn, and I'll just dismiss old crop at this point, are you bearish, bullish, or neutral?
Well, I would have to assume that most people have about half their crop sold, either at lower prices or at higher prices. So if you're half sold, I think you can afford to be patient, because July weather will tell the story. That 162 number by Informa could be right, or it could be 10 bushels too high. I mean, year in and year out, July weather tells the tale, and we saw that last year. So I'm not in any hurry to sell any more corn until we see what the July weather shakes out at. Now, if you're not half sold, these are, you know, now that we've rallied quite a bit up above that $6 level, you can sell $6 cash corn. I think you should be selling corn up to half, but above that, I'm not ready to do much more than that.
I like this week's recovery rally. To the point where you could almost say that we've muted the reversal down that we saw during the month of June. But as Greg said, it's all weather at this point. July is weather. And if the weather maps that's gone across my desk here, if those kind of indicate a three-week period of kind of a warmer, drier type pattern, you're going to see crop rating levels decline in that atmosphere, and I think that tees up December corn. I think I would not rule out new highs in December corn. That all depends upon what kind of weather pattern we have in the next 3 weeks.
You know, we're 4 to 7 to 8 degrees warmer than normal over the next 8 to 15 day forecast, Todd. I mean, there's a lot of areas that are dry. We're seeing some stress in some places. And that's what the market told us on Friday during this last week. We had China and we had the weather. And the weather is, as some people put it, it's not so wet that we want to buy it. It's not so dry that we want to buy it. But it is hot enough that we don't want to sell it.
Oh, I'll just throw the rest of these papers out. So it's a weather market, right? That's where we are. Okay, soybeans. July this week had a high of $13.55 and a quarter, a low at $13.21 and a quarter. Settlement price there up 29 and three quarters at $13.52. November beans settled at $13.46 and a half, up 34 cents. When I talked to you Thursday, Dan, we talked about the triple top. Up there where? About $14.
Yeah, 14.05-ish in that level.
And you said triple tops are made to be taken out.
And I think it's game on. I think USDA's 75 number, this double crop is shaky. I'm not too sure you're going to get a big double crop. You got areas that's too wet. You've got areas hot and dry. And like I said, it is a weather market here, and I think the bean thing is that triple top is just there for the technicians to go on up and blow all the shorts out.
Any reason fundamentally that should happen?
Yeah, beans develop later. We're talking about the possibility of that high-pressure ridge coming along the end of July and maybe lasting into the first August. That's when beans need some not that hot of weather, so that's the fundamental reason.
The extra 2 million acres in corn that the USDA threw out was negative, obviously, but the one silver lining out of all the reports was less bean acres. And so even if that number gets revised later on, that's not going to happen for a couple of months. So in the meantime, the traders have to trade this lower bean acreage number, and then you throw weather problems on top of that, and we can take out $14.
When we come back, we'll talk with Chad Hart from Iowa State. He's their grain specialist. Here's the way some of the rest of the numbers finished up at the CME Group on Chicago this week. Wheat futures finished in July at $6.50, up 66, and the July of this week, or July of 12 at $7.57, up 19.5 cents. Live cattle futures in the August at $114.65, up $1.80. Feeders at $143.60, 312.5 higher. And the lean hogs at $95.87.5 finished the week, 37.5 cents higher.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute in Champaign. Warm, humid weather was back again the first part of July, really the first of the lazy, hazy days of summer. High pressure dominated our weather this week. Temperatures were generally about what they should be for early July, with highs in the 80s to occasionally near 90. Dew points were also elevated this week, and with only very light winds, much of the time the air was a bit humid during the day. Although weak cold fronts did cross through Illinois this week, they did little to help the humidity, but did help to keep the lid on temperatures. Temperatures this week averaged about 1 to 2 degrees above normal. Rainfall this week was heaviest in southern Illinois, where thunderstorms moved across the region ahead of one of the frontal boundaries. It was a dry week across much of northern and central Illinois until about midweek, when scattered showers and thunderstorms developed ahead of an upper-level disturbance moving through the Midwest. In general, there will not be a lot of change in the weather pattern next week. A stalled front will bring a chance of thunderstorms to much of Illinois on Monday, but by Tuesday it should push south of the state. Seasonably warm and somewhat humid weather will then prevail the remainder of the week until late Friday and Saturday. Another round of showers and thunderstorms is possible as an upper-level wave passes through Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the July 8th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Dan Zwicker from ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Our guest today is Chad Hart. He's grain specialist at Iowa State University. Thank you so much for taking the time with us, Chad. I want you to discuss just a bit the grain stocks report released by USDA. The best we can tell, it showed that farmers in Iowa moved much more quickly their grain off on farm to off farm facilities. Why did that happen?
Well, I think it was a combination of the prices we've been seeing over this springtime, and a lot of our farmers here in Iowa actually took advantage of those prices, started moving that commodity as quickly as they possibly could. I think when you look at the overall pattern, though, the idea is we see that not only here in Iowa, but you see the sort of similar numbers in Illinois as I look across at Indiana as well.
you know, as the reports say that Iowa planted a lot more corn than what we thought they were going to earlier, and that it's rated very high, are there that many acres, and is it looking as good as the government says?
Well, I'm sitting right in the middle of Ames, and I'll tell you this right now. Everything around us looks very good. What you saw our producers do is once they could get in the fields in early May, they kept planting corn until they absolutely ran out of seed. And that's basically what the USDA report said, is that these guys just kept planting corn. In fact, you know, arguably they went a little deeper into the year planting corn than they normally do here in Iowa. Normally they would have shifted to beans, and they didn't make that shift quite as early this year.
Yeah, Chad, I saw some survey work for Iowa that would indicate that USDA is actually low on their number. Any guesses from what you've seen driving around Iowa, whether or not USDA is low on their number?
Well, I guess the possibility is there. Driving around, I'll put it this way, it reminds me a lot of 07. And in 07, Iowa was at 14.2, which is right where USDA's put us right now.
Getting back to that stocks report, three of the last four reports, anyway, have caught the traders by surprise. Back in September, we found 300 million bushels. Then in March, we lost those 300 million. Here in June, we find those 300 million. What are the chances that the government isn't measuring storage capacity correctly, or that we'll see some kind of a surprise in the next quarterly report?
I would say it's pretty good. As you say, I mean, we seem to be finding and losing it in subsequent reports. You know, in March, there were questions about the stocks report when it came out, and it was like, okay, are things a little too bullish then, bearish now? How are things balancing out, especially and as I look at feed disappearance throughout this? It's hard to reconcile these numbers with what we're seeing as far as a relatively steady herd size out there when we're looking at, you know, cattle are a little bit down, hogs a little bit up. We wouldn't expect feed demand to be moving quite as much as these stock reports seem to be indicating.
Is there any reason on that DDGs would figure into the backside of that and that because of the large number of ethanol plants that are in Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, that 300 million comes and goes based on DDGs being fed instead of corn?
Well, I would say that DDG pressure, though, should be pretty much evident across the entire set of reports we see on the stocks report rather than just showing up boom in one quarter. The idea that DDG supply is coming at us consistently throughout the year. So we should see its effects being small across the quarterly reports instead of showing up within one.
Let me follow up on that just to sort of chase it down a bit more. Would it not be the case, though, that producers who own their own grain would be feeding corn but turn to DDGs later in the year?
They could be doing that. I know in talking, though, with at least a few of the guys here in central Iowa, they tend not to shift their ration that much. They tend to like to see a balanced ration throughout the entire year. So, for example, a cattle producer I know here, about 15 miles east of me here, actually has shares in the ethanol plant, but fairly, you know, he keeps his ration fairly steady as opposed to shifting back and forth.
You know, we're going to be running a little bit behind on pollination as usual here in Illinois and Indiana. Is Iowa going to be on schedule, or when are you looking for pollination to be as far as this heat that's coming in the next 10 to 15 days?
As far as we're looking right here, you know, as far as the way this crop's looking, we're only 2-3 days behind where we would normally like to be. So this crop is, like I say, looking fantastic, given that it went in a little later than we'd care for.
Any ideas how far along the Iowa producer is as far as sold on this crop?
I'm hearing numbers across the board. We are seeing, and you know, we have been seeing this throughout the springtime. There was a stack of bids being placed out there trying to get some early corn in, you know, but with the late planting, it's not likely we're able to hit that window. But yeah, producers were taking advantage of the higher prices. They're a little bit more sold than they were last year.
At the Post report news conference, they mentioned that they were going to resurvey planted acres in Montana, Minnesota, and the Dakotas. They mentioned that they were set to resurvey Indiana and Ohio, but the people on the ground told them that they were confident that those numbers were correct, so they're not going to resurvey Indiana and Ohio. Does that sound legitimate, or did that take any take you by surprise that they didn't resurvey those two states?
It takes me a little bit by surprise, just because when you look at the timing of when they were conducting these surveys, you're looking early to mid-June there. There was still some area that arguably was intended. The question is, did it really get planted or not?
Have you thought much about what the impact of Washington, D.C.'s moves on the ethanol credits and tariffs this week, if they are implemented, which would mean those would all go away, mm-hmm. might be in your state?
Well, looking at where the economics sit right now, and I know there's been some studies done here at Iowa State and University of Missouri, looking at the impact of the loss of that tax credit. And in the grand scheme of things, it looks like minimal impact here to start out with, just because the blending economics are relatively favorable still for ethanol right now. And the long-run impact on these estimates has been in the 4 to 5% range for hitting those corn prices.
What are the types of things that you've been working on as an ag economist for the producers in your state? What's your most recent writings?
Well, most recently has been about these reports, how they've been stacked up, basically how they're being conducted, because there have been a lot of questions about, it seems like every USDA report that comes down the line now is a shocker to the system. And when you look at how 08 has played out here, it reminds me of a lot, how 2011 has played out. It reminds me a lot of 2008, where we've had late plantings, where we've got a lot of indecision and a lot of uncertainty about just how much area we've got in this crop, how that crop's going to fare. I heard a lot of the discussion about what, this is definitely a weather market, because you see the Informa estimate at 13.75 out there. USDA, if they stick to their numbers right now, would be at 13.4. And I'm hearing analysts going below 13 as well. I believe it was Goldman Sachs, their analyst came out and said he believed this to be a much shorter crop than what USDA is projecting. And so you've got all this range out there right now, mainly because this crop started out sort of behind the eight ball with plantings, and it's continued to be sort of behind that thing ever since.
Are you satisfied with the acreage figure?
I am up to this point. I mean, I'm looking at that acreage, and that's what they got in that survey. Yeah. And that survey's, it's a fairly systematic approach that they use. They've used it every year. It's usually a pretty good estimate.
The farmers are not satisfied, but, of course, the survey came from them. But most, it seems to me, that the analysts we talk to are satisfied, including you, that number is right. And then you said you were working on the rest of the reports. What are you talking about with the stocks report?
Well, with the stocks report, we're looking at the disappearance, basically, and trying to piece together how we could get shocked one way in March, shocked another way here in June, and trying to piece through, okay, what's the story here that brings these numbers back together?
Oh, do you have an answer?
No, I wish I did. In this case, I really am, like I say, I'm looking at the conundrum that's happening on the feed side. How this, when you look at ethanol, and I'm looking at that demand there, it's been fairly steady. Yeah, exports, our international buyers are jumping in on these breaks. But I think to tell the stock story, you got to be able to tell the feed story, and that's the one I'm still trying to piece together.
Well, when you get it all done, let us know, and we'll talk to you again, okay?
All right.
Hey, thanks so much, Chad.
Thank you.
Chad Hart is a grain specialist at Iowa State University. Now time for a final word from our analyst in studio, Wayne Nelson.
Well, the one thing we're going to have to do is keep our eye on the weather, what the weatherman says, and which weatherman the market is following, because the funds are following the weather.
Dan Zwicker?
From a historical point of view, July rallies are usually good pricing opportunities, and it kind of looks like we got one going here after a bearish report here a week ago.
And Greg Johnson.
The government numbers were negative. If they are going to change them, it's not going to be for a couple of months. So basically, we've got weather to hang our hat on. We need to use this weather rally as a chance to make some more sales.
Our thanks to Greg Johnson of the Andersons, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, along with Chad Hart from Iowa State University. That wraps up another edition of Commodity Week. Have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.